Here we go. All right, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. Today we are broadcasting live from high atop Spiritual Gifts Tower. And this is where we gather to inculcate our spiritual gifts, especially the spiritual gift of parsing, which is one of the highest of the gifts. Hello, David. Welcome. And especially when it comes to Hebrews, because it's parse or die. We are continuing the writer's inspired account of the high priestly office of Christ. And we read last time chapter 7, verse 26, which sort of quickly translated would read something like this: For it is fitting for us also, or even, such a one, or such a high priest is fitting for us. Maybe we do it that way. And then the high priest is described by a series of adjectives, right? Holy, not bad, not stained, separated from sinners, or maybe from sinful things, and higher than the heavens having become, dot, dot, dot. And we were about to get to the relative clause of verse 27. So Hebrews 7, 27, and that's where we will pick up. And here we get to see a famous adverb that belongs in Hebrews almost more than any place else. So verse 27. Hus uk eche kath hemeron ananken, hosper hoi archie reis, prateron hiperton ideon hamarteon, thesias anaferin epeta ton tu lau, tuta gar epoiesen ephapax heoton, on an enkos. So we start with the relative pronoun, who, and the antecedent is the high priest, right? Remember that with pronouns, the antecedent is agreeing with the pronoun in gender and number, but not necessarily case. Here, hos is masculine singular nominative, and it's nominative because it just happens to be the subject of the clause in which it occurs. So, Tim, we have a seat over here, but that means you have to sit next to the teacher. So, you know. So, yeah, it's okay. This is just like Luke. Come up higher, friend. Right? So, yeah. So, there is always a... What's that beautiful Advent hymn? The new one? I think it's a Vita tune. There is room and welcome here for me. Right? So... Who does not have, now kath, kata plus the accusative, typically means according to, but with a time word like day, it can have what's called a distributive sense, and that is to say day by day or daily, okay? And that makes good sense here because remember the contrast is between the repeated offerings of the Levitical Aaronic priest as opposed to the once for all offering of Christ. So who does not have... daily, the ananken, the need, the necessity, hosper, just as the chief priests, and then you supply do. Proteron is, as you can see, it's a comparative from protos, so first, firster, okay, which doesn't make any sense. So we'll just translate it formerly, or in the first place. Hiper plus the genitive, on behalf of the sins, which one? Ideon, their own sins. And now we have sacrifice, anaferin, which means to offer up, right? So this is the need. First, on behalf of their own sins, sacrifice to offer. Epeta, then, or next. And now we have to fill in all kinds of blanks. You kind of know what it's supposed to say, which is always helpful, right? I mean, if this were Josephus or something, we'd be just sucking air. I think the Greek verb for that is suknemi, I think. So it's a me verb. So what you'd have to say is, like, just repeat hiper on behalf of the people ones. Make sense? So first, if you're a regular... Archaea race, first you got to offer sacrifices for yourself and your own sins, and you got to do that day by day, and then you also have to offer sacrifices for the sins of the people, right? So again, remember that the writer is not criticizing negatively the Aaronic Levitical priesthood in itself. It's only in comparison to Christ, which is why you have lots of comparative adjectives. We're about to get to a bunch of betters in chapter 8. Better covenant, better mediator, better this, better that, right? So there was nothing wrong with the Aaronic priesthood since, as you might recall, it was God's idea. So, and I also said that because Dr. Lessing is here, and he teaches Old Testament stuff. So, and he's my friend. So, verse 27, then let's finish it off. For this thing, that is what this whole thing I referred to, the offering of sacrifice, this thing he did, epoiesen, ephapax, there's the great adverb, once for all, literally means once. By the way, our term hapax legomenon, which is a grammatical term, as you know, it means once being said. So we refer to a New Testament hapax legomenon as a word that occurs only once in the New Testament, Matthean hapax legomenon. Here we have ephapax, right? For this he did once himself offering. This is anenkos. Anenenkos is from, believe it or not, anaphero. Right? It's the aorist participle active of anaphero. So cleaning up verse 27. Who does not have daily the necessity as the chief priests, first for his own sins sacrifice to offer, and then substitute or supply for the ones of the people. For this he did once by, maybe we could take it as a modal or manner participle, by offering himself. And by the way, notice here that, you know, we learned a very, very helpful rule of thumb of the relative time of the participle, right? Where normally or very often an aorist participle would be one step back in time prior to the main verb. Here that doesn't make sense. It's not like first he offered and then he made sacrifice. No, it's the same time. So this is a good example of where the rule of thumb of the relative time of the participle doesn't always work. This aorist participle pretty much has to be at the same time as the main verb. Okay, so, yeah, Jim.
Does it hold up to say that when the aorist participle follows the main verb, it's usually not like the time aspect is usually?
Oh, that's a very good question. Let me repeat that, and I can give a very good answer to that. The question is, when the aorist participle might follow the main verb, is that a time when the rule of thumb might not apply? And the answer is, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't actually know if word order would help determine that question. So, does anybody want to work up a 2-page paper on that, or maybe during the break? Okay. Yeah. Good. Yeah. And Jim, you're a little scary because you'll probably work on it. Yeah. Which I'm looking forward to already. So, good. Very good question. I don't know the answer to it. Any questions about verse 27? Other comments? Yeah, Mike. Yes?
Would that help define the time?
Well, let's look down to the manuscript evidence. What is the alternate reading? No, it would still be aorist. That's a little hard to decipher. You see, we've got what we have here in the text is the aorist participle of anaphero. This would just be the aorist participle of prosphero. Yeah, so see the pros n, and this got a dash. You're supposed to know to fill in the rest of the word from up above. So it would still have the same, it would still be an aorist participle, in other words. So, good question. Thank you for caring about the critical apparatus. So, virtue is its own reward, right? Very good. Anything else on verse 27? Right. This is kind of cool. I mean, it's harder than normal. It's not agonizing, but it's, at least, I'm a grateful to the brother in Arizona who actually emailed me and suggested Hebrews about 2 years ago. I don't think I would have picked Hebrews. So I can't remember what his name is. I've never met him, but he's a grad student at University of Arizona or something. So he'll probably email me and said, it was I. So. Verse 28, here we go. Hanamaskar anthropus kathistesin archieres echantas asthenean. halagas de tes horkomazias tes metatanaman huyan eston iona teteleomenon. And now let's explain the difference. Gar, right? And gar is post-positive. You could have put the gar between ha and namas, believe it or not. So maybe the writer is wanting to emphasize namas here a little bit by putting that two-word phrase first. For the law, the verb is kathistezen from kathistemi. This is just a present indicative active third singular. The law appoints men. And then you have a double accusative here. Anthropos is the direct object. And then you have another accusative, archi res. And this is classically or traditionally called the second one is called a predicate accusative. In Wallace's, I think, helpful description, it's the complement in an object complement double accusative. So the direct object is men, anthropos. And then you say something more about, and so in this kind of a construction, you supply a verb of the to be or the verb to be or as. So for the law appoints men as chief priests. Now we have a participle from echo, right? Ekontas, and its referent, agreeing in gender number case, is priests, right? Probably. Could be men, but priests is closer. Priests, and now even though there's no article anywhere to be found, let's go ahead and take it as attributive adjectival, so directly modifying priests, who have weakness. And here, probably, theological weakness or spiritual weakness, since they have to offer up sacrifices for their own sins, right? And they also croak. They also die, right? And, of course, death is also a theological category, because the only reason you die is because you are a sinner. Right? With one exception. So, and then you can read 2 Corinthians 5 on that one. For the law appoints men as chief priests who have weakness, but the word of the oath, and this is going back to, guess what? Psalm 110, verse 4. You are a priest forever according to the order of, that's the oath that the writer is referring to. But the word of the oath, now let's describe oath, we'll repeat the article, the after the law oath, all right? But the word of the oath, which was after the law, and now you repeat, you reach up and you snag kathistezen and you repeat it, appointed a huion, a son, accusative, right? So you know you have to supply a verb which takes an accusative direct object. For the word of the oath, which was after the law, appointed a son, and now we've got a perfect participle passive from teleao, which means to complete or reach a goal, right? So you could, or perfect, you could translate a son who has been perfected, eston iona, forever, right? And I actually played with this a little bit this morning. Since it's a perfect participle passive, perfect stem has focus on a continuing result. Who stands at the goal forever, or something like that. So Christ has finished the work. It doesn't have to happen again. This high priest is a son who has attained the goal. He has, quote-unquote, been perfected. Right, and eston iona is kind of an idiom that is typically translated forever. So, and isn't that interesting? I was thinking about Galatians. In Galatians 3, you have two aspects of the covenant, one of which is being misunderstood. It's the original promise to Abraham and then the law of Moses, right? And Paul says, look, the law that comes later can't add a condition to the original covenant, right? Because God swore by a promise, right? So in that argument, what comes later can't change what's earlier. In this argument, based on Psalm 110, verse 4, which comes after the law of Moses, because it's a psalm of David, right? The writer says, look, you have an original institution of a priesthood. But that one wasn't so great. They had to keep doing it. They couldn't perfect anybody. It was limited. And so now there's a promise that God gave in Psalm 110 that came after the institution of the Aaronic priesthood. And that now is the better, the superior, the once-for-all priestly office of Christ. Very interesting argument.
Would the Hebrews have found that offensive?
I don't know. Oh, well, yeah, probably. Yeah, what do you mean you're getting rid of the Aaronic priesthood?
Yeah. I mean, but something coming after the law had been given to take that place?
Not if they were thinking eschatologically.
And the chances of that?
Relatively high. Yeah, yeah. No, actually, there is some speculation. You may know the name W.D. Davies, who's a older, I think, in fact, he might have passed away. He was a Pauline scholar and also worked in Matthew a lot. He's the Davies of Davies and Allison, the huge three-volume commentary on Matthew. He searched for kind of ideas that dovetail into especially Paul's thought. And there is some evidence that already in the Second Temple period, they're thinking, okay, the law is only for this age, but in the age to come, you know, when God intervenes, when Messiah returns, however they would say it, now there'll be a change. So really, they, at least many in Judaism, do have a kind of a salvation historical eschatological framework, and so that's the argument. That's the argument of Hebrews, right? And by the way, we don't know much about the author of Hebrews, of course, and we don't know the date of Hebrews. But this is one of the arguments for a relatively early date. Why argue this hard with regard to the temple sacrificial system if it's not still happening? You know, if the Romans have already conquered Jerusalem and they're not offering sacrifices anymore, it's not exactly a moot point, as the Mishnah shows, because you have centuries later, you have intense interest in cultic matters in the Mishnah, right? So it's not a killer argument, but it makes sense to some people, at least, to say, look, Hebrews could very well be written in the 50s or the early 60s, while the cultus is still a rival possibility, if I could say it that way. So it's a kind of an educated guess, but it's the kind of thing you mention in Bible class, right? And people go, huh, our pastor knows a lot of stuff. We should give him a raise. Right? Isn't that, Reed, that's the way it works, isn't it? Yeah. Any other questions about verse 28? Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Right. Well, here we are in the Tower of Power at Concordia Seminary. Let's go into chapter 8. I never thought we'd get there. Kephalion de epe tois legomenois, toi uton echomen archiere, hus ekathesen endexia, tu thronu tes megalozines en tois uranois. We'll get verse 2 as well. Ton hageon laitir gos kai tes genes tes alethines. Hain epeixen hakyrios, uk anthropos. Kephalion is an adjective. It means related to the head. You can see kephale, or it means chief. And here it's a neuter accusative singular, and it's actually acting like an adverb. And so chiefly, or the main thing, epitois concerning the being said things. Okay, so let me sum up now what I've been talking about. It's kind of a huge oon, if I can say it that way. It's a huge therefore, 1, 2, 5 word therefore. Here's the deal, right? Toi uton echomen archiera, such we have a high priest. We have this kind of a high priest, right? By the way, this argument only makes sense to people who think of themselves as dirty and needing to be cleansed, right? So maybe in our day and age, before you preach this good news, you might have to preach some law, right? To say, brothers and sisters, let's talk about dirt for a little bit. Let's talk about stain. And now let's talk about how we get rid of the stain. I mean, really, Walther, I know you guys don't believe it, but Dr. Lessing and I do. Walther was right. So, okay. But you don't have to believe it until you're ordained, isn't it right, Reed? I think, yeah. Reed went to the dentist. This is the quietest I've ever heard you, man. We have such a chief priest who sat down. This is from Kathizo, just an aorist indicative, who sat down at the right hand of the throne of the majesty. You might just render that the majestic throne in the heavens. And now let's modify this this who, because hus is nominative, and now we have a nominative noun just trailing along, litur gos, which means something like liturgical minister, or it, you know, it can be translated just servant. Litur geo means to serve, that's the verb, especially in cultic, that is to say worship context, and we have a serious worship context going on here, right? So a liturgical minister of the holy ones, or maybe of the holy things. I rather think it might be the a neuter tone hageon here to refer to kind of the tabernacle apparatus, if I could use that word, and then also the heavenly tabernacle. So a minister of the holy things and of the tent, the skene, which one? The true one, right? Hain, which, relative pronoun, right? Now, epeixen, you'd probably have to look up. It's from pegnimi, okay? Now, that's once you got that, it's easy to remember, because if you think about driving pegs in the ground, I mean, I made this up myself, this actually means to set up, like to set up a tent, okay? Pegnimi, right? And so this is the aorist. It goes pegnimi, peixo is the second principal part, epeixa. So this is the aorist, the weak aorist indicative active third singular of pegnimi, which the Lord erected, or which the Lord pegged out and set up, that is to say the true tabernacle, ouk anthropos, not a man. And the writer is about to go into this interesting reality that when Moses received the directions to set up the tabernacle, when he received the directions on Sinai, he was following a heavenly pattern. And the real tabernacle is the one after which the earthly tabernacle was created. So, and he's going to lean very heavily on Exodus 25, verse 40, which we won't get to today. But grammatically, we'll do eight, 1 and 2 again, and then please make comments or suggestions. So now the chief thing with regard to the things being said, we have such a high priest who sat down at the right hand of the majestic throne in the heavens, comma, a servant, a minister of the holy things and of the true tabernacle, which God erected, not a man. All right? Questions, comments, anything? Okay. You know what? I think we're going to stop here. It's 23 after. And we will pick up here at Hebrews chapter 8, verse 3 next week. Thank you very much.